Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Informal Paranormal. My name is Mike, and I'm joined by John, my co-host.
Hey everyone, how you doing?
And we also have Sharon here tonight. We're going to be interviewing.
Hi everybody.
Hi, Sharon.
Hi.
How's it going?
Real good.
Great.
How about you?
I'm doing fine. I've had a fabulous weekend.
Well, Mike, I'm glad you had a good weekend, but you know what? I think Sharon and I had a better weekend.
I think you did too, actually. But mine was pretty good too. Anyway.
Hey, Mike, before you get too far, why don't you go ahead and some of the people might not know who Sharon is, even though anyone that's a regular here in the chat room would know who Sharon is.
Well, Sharon is our media director, Sharon K. West. She's on our board of directors, and she really does a fabulous job for us. And is there anything else, Sharon, you can think of? I mean, that's pretty much, you're the media director, I guess, right?
Yes, and also I'm the executive producer of Paranexus Universe Radio.
Oh, that's
right.
And
I try to schedule good guests, interesting people. So
Mike.
Don't you also write articles for an online magazine?
I do. I'm an examiner at examiner.com for haunted places and also American history. And I have blogs, and I just kind of dabble in a lot of stuff.
Sharon, now don't be minimizing what you do in the blogging world. You are a blogging maniac.
Well, I do. I have about 5 blogs, so... I just wish I could write more.
And with tons of people reading them and stuff. They're very popular.
Well, thanks.
So, listen, you know, I want Sharon was, for those of you that were on our special investigation on Friday night at Historic Georgia Springs, you'll know that Sharon had come up there and to join myself and the rest of the Shenandoah Shadows team at Historic Jordan Springs in Virginia. And... we had some interesting things happen there after we'd gotten off the air, which, if we have time, I'd like to talk about. But I'd like to start tonight's show with what happened on the second night of having Sharon with us. We were down in the central Shenandoah Valley at a Native American shaman's home. And he had invited Sharon as basically the guest of honor to a sweat ceremony. And we spent Saturday afternoon with him as well as Saturday night and a good portion of Sunday morning. And there was a lot of different things happening there during the entire time. Sharon, would you like to share anything that happened in the afternoon, or is there something in particular you'd like to talk about first?
Well, maybe we better kind of explain what a sweat ceremony is. Maybe everyone doesn't really know. I guess basically the shaman builds a dome-shaped kind of tent. He bends saplings over and then ties them together. And then he covers this with different tarpaulins that are of different colors that are significant in Native American ceremonies. And he builds a big fire outside, and they have special rocks that they heat up till they're red hot. And, of course, we have a doorkeeper, which John was the doorkeeper last night. And there's 4 rounds. They take you in. Basically, they will smudge you before you go in, and that is where they light What's the name of the sage? It's sage in a shell, and they will light that, and it smokes. And then the smoke they put all over you, and this is a purification ritual. And then the shaman goes through various things, ceremonies beforehand, and also they prepare four pipes for smoking beforehand with various smudging them and all of that. And so you're assigned a seat inside of this lodge and according to the four directions. And each direction has a certain significance. And I was assigned the west direction. And so you go in according to the directions to seat you around the perimeter of this lodge. In the center is a pit where the rocks are going to be placed. But then you go in one after another and sit down. It's dark in there, very dark. You just get a little bit of light whenever the flap is up from the fire outside. And you sit down cross-legged. There's four rounds where each round they open up the flap and bring more rocks in. And so the first round is where the shaman will welcome the spirits in. And the rocks, various, John might know more about the significance of how they brought the different rocks in. They represent different, well, I'll let John explain that. But anyway, he has a bucket of water, and they'll put the flap down, and it's pitch black in there. No light is allowed in, and he will begin his ritual of he'll throw the ladles of water on the rocks, and of course the steam just comes up. And the first round, he welcomes in the spirits, and then we go sit there during that, and then they open the flap, bring more rocks in, and then that's the second round. And in this round, they go around the circle clockwise, and each person prays for friends, family, and others on this round. And so one by one, you go around, and while he's throwing ladles of water on, and of course it gets hotter and hotter, and I thought at some points I wondered how much hotter this was going to get.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about that. I've heard that it actually is hard to breathe.
It very much is hard to breathe. The thing that I did that helped me was we have hand towels where you can wipe the sweat off your face. I kind of held it up in front of my nose and mouth so the steam wouldn't hit me right in my breathing apparatus. And also I would take small, short breaths until I was acclimated, you know, to the heat. If you tried to take in a big breath, you'd really be overwhelmed and it feels like you might be suffocating. So, but if it gets too much, you can lay down, put your face on Mother Earth, and turn your face toward the outside wall of the tent. And that's where it's cooler and you can, you know, cope a little better. But I found that in my situation, I have always had a hard time sweating a lot. I just don't sweat. And so I'm sitting there, and it's getting hotter and hotter, and I'm thinking, I don't know how this is going to be. But then once I broke out into a sweat, then I was fine. It was like the internal pressure was just being heated up, and it was going to have to come out for me to, you know, be able to get some relief with it. And then after that happened, I could, you know, take the towel down. I mean, they was continuing to pour the water on there, and it got hotter, and I was coping quite well. But the water, the sweat just runs off of you. You know, you're soaking wet. You actually dress in towels. I was allowed to wear a special dress that I had gotten, that was given to me. It was a Mexican traditional dress, and there were certain things that I was doing personally with this as well. So, but my dress was completely soaked through, even for the first time first round. So that round was over. Then the third round comes, and that's where you go around the circle and you pray for yourself, what you would, you know, want for yourself. And it was during that time that I got touched on the leg. And the shaman said that grandmother had come in and sat down beside of me, and actually that was the side where I got touched on the leg. And, you know, this sounds spooky or whatever maybe to some people, but it's not like you see on television or in movies. There's no fear. I mean, these are just spirits. And it was during, I think, that third round when I started looking up at the ceiling and I started seeing these lights. And I thought, well, there must be a little crack there where some lights are coming in. But no, then another light lit up and then just continued all these lights, little spots of lights, and they would open up and expand out, and I'd see these faces, and I'd see animals. And I remember this one face that I saw was a beautiful woman with long black hair, and it was particularly crisp that I could see it. And I have to explain, you're not allowed to wear any metal in there because of the heat would heat it up and burn you. So I couldn't wear my glasses, and I'm terribly nearsighted. So those faces were not as clear as what I would have liked them to be. But the shaman said that it was quite active with spirits and even with animal spirits coming in.
Sharon, can I interrupt you?
Sure. Sure, go ahead. Just stop me anytime. I might be rambling.
No, you're not rambling. I just want to clarify something about what you said. Now, people that have psychic experiences sometimes see with their eyes, and sometimes they're seeing a vision in their head, if you will. Since you were having trouble clearly seeing these things because you weren't wearing glasses, you were clearly perceiving them with your eyes. Is that correct?
Well, I think that I was seeing them with my eyes because they weren't. If the light would, it seemed like if the light would brighten quite a bit, I could see the face more clearly. Now, maybe that was what it was, that some of the lights weren't as bright as others.
Okay.
But I don't know whether I was seeing them with my spiritual eyes or if I was seeing them with my natural eyes, but those faces were there, and I was just having a wonderful little time there just looking at all these things. And then, of course, that round was over, and that was the third round. Then they brought some more rocks in, and he kept putting the water on there. And I have to say that every time they bring a rock in, each person has something to put on the rock. One person had a sprig of sage, and she would kind of stroke the rock with it. And then I had a little bag of some sort of a herb, and the other people had herbs as well, I think. And you would just take a little sprig out and put it over on the rock, and there would be like a little light. Sometime it would ignite into a flame, but they have to get that out because that creates smoke, and that's, you know, not good. It's just steam in there.
We have a question.
So anyway,
we have a question in the chat room. Catherine wants to know, does the excessive heat cause people to see these things maybe?
Well, I suppose that it contributes to it, although I have seen things a little bit like this when I wasn't in a that situation. There's been times when I have to, at night, I have to reach up and see whether my eyes are open and closed because I can see faces that you know, I know this, saying this on air makes me quite crazy, but I do see things. And so sometimes I don't know whether I'm seeing them with my eyes or my spiritual eyes. But it's quite interesting and mind-boggling, really.
I would just like to comment about the crazy thing. It's like, one, you're definitely not crazy. Two, for those of you over the last year that has interacted with Sharon and she mentions that she's a little sensitive. That's like saying a hydrogen bomb makes a little noise. It's the world's greatest understatement because she is very impressive when it comes to her psychic abilities and very humble. So,
That's a good combination.
Well, I'd like to make one comment to Catherine's question. Catherine, uh-huh. I've been in the ceremony before when we start seeing things. Now, the people in the ceremony are not communicating with one another. And after the fact, when essentially everyone's kind of sharing what happened, people are seeing the same things. They're seeing these faces. They're seeing balls of light floating around within the sweat lodge. Yet, when they're happening, you know, there's no communication to that effect. So I think the heat contributes to this experience, but not in the sense that necessarily it's causing people to hallucinate. I think what it causes them to do is to get into a heightened state. It's, in fact, I think the heat essentially puts them into a either hypnotic or pre-hypnotic state because they collectively experience things in there, yet there's nothing that's creating, at least man-made creating, that experience. So, Sharon, I didn't mean to interrupt you with all that, but after you saw the faces, did anything else happen to you in there?
Well, you know, it wasn't only faces either. There was, like, forms of light that would change forms and things like that. There's also, like, you can just feel, like, maybe shadows or something is around. You feel like you're, what strikes me is that this is just a small little lodge, but you feel like you're in a great big place. And also, We were in there for like maybe an hour and a half, hour and 45 minutes. It felt like it was just 15 minutes. I mean, it went so fast. And I couldn't imagine that we had been in that place for that long. So it seems like time and space, there's something changed when you do this. So
when you're in that environment, as Sharon said, it's pitch black in there except for the glow of the rocks. But essentially you can't see in there at all. So you have sensory deprivation occurring as well as sensory overload in terms of the heat and the humidity. So there's like these two things that are really knocking you out of the left side analytical brain. And one of the things that Sharon was talking about is that when you're inside the lodge, the sense of space seems to alter. It seems to get huge, even though it's not really that big. And time, everyone totally loses track of time. Time becomes absolutely irrelevant.
But I think that it was in this third round, too, that they put a rock right in front of me, and it was glowing, and it looked like a man's face smiling. I suppose this is a classic example of matrixing. But I'm sitting there looking at this man's face for a long time, and it didn't go out for a long time. And they call these, isn't it the stone people?
Right.
What do they call? And that when they're crackling and making that little sizzling noise, they're saying that the stone people are really talking tonight.
Right.
So this particular rock really looked like a man, a people to me. So, but anyway, that was like around in the third round. And then the last round is where the shaman, he does his prayer. And I believe, was it during that third or fourth round that he had to leave and take care of a problem outside, John?
Yeah, and actually that was at the end of the second round that happened.
Okay.
Before we get into the actual weird stuff, because everything so far is we're clearly still in normal land. It's about to get out there for us. why don't you just tell them how the the procedure in the fourth round, and then we'll start going to a couple of really unexplainable things.
Okay. Well, he does his prayer, and of course, there's more water on the rocks. You know, John has brought in more. And then that's basically it. Well, no, wait. That's not it. Then they light the pipes. And I've been thinking about how my children will laugh at me when they find out their old mother has been smoking a pipe. So anyway, they'll have a field day with that. But they have four different pipes, and they have, like, herbs in them. One is sage. I don't know. Some of the other herbs I had never heard of before. And so they light those, and they start passing them around. And you can't inhale because it will just choke you. And unfortunately, I got mixed up once.
Yeah, I kind of recall when I was outside hearing someone doing a little bit of choking in there. And
yeah, I suddenly got just a little bit of that in my throat, and it does choke you. But I recovered pretty quickly with it, and I got the hang of it better. But there's a woman's pipe, there's a man's pipe. I forget, one of the pipes is like 500 years old.
And
when they pass these pipes around and smoke them, that seals the purpose of the ceremony. And it's really, really strange how I would never have thought it, but it does. I mean, there was something not finished until we did the pipes. And we kept passing them around and passing them around. And, of course, those herbs, I mean, pretty much was really relaxing, you know.
Well, you keep referring to these herbs, and I want to make this clear.
Yeah.
Sharon was not smoking anything that she could have gotten arrested for. No, not at all. It's a mixture of plain tobacco, the bark off of a tree that actually contains a level of digitalis, sage, and another local plant leaf. Again, there's nothing psychotropic or anything like that in these plants. So even though you did inhale it, Catherine's asking, were you stoned?
No. But it was really
Sharon,
relaxing.
Sharon, you were high, but just high on the whole experience, right?
Yeah, that's true. And it was just calming and relaxing to just finish it up that way for some reason, and I would never have thought it. But anyway, so then we'd get up and go out and into the coolness of the night, and I felt great. I mean, I still feel really good. It feels like you've taken a bath on the inside. Just, and I don't know what all that entails, but I felt really good. And
There's a question in the chat room, Sharon. They're asking, is it possible that during the sweat you get into like a deep meditative state? Did that happen to you in terms of?
Actually, I was really observing. I thought, I was really observing what they were doing. I was trying to learn. There was a word that they would say after every thing was, like after someone was praying, they would say this word, and I couldn't catch it. It was an Indian word. So I'm trying to learn. I'm trying to be able to say that word, and I couldn't ever get it out of my mouth. But so I was pretty much in the role of an observer. But I was still in my mode. I mean, I have two modes, on and off, and I was on with the my other set of eyes. So when I'm at home, I turn that off because I don't want to see that all the time. It's very, can drive you nuts to see spirits all the time. So, but anyway, I think, too, when you fast, it kind of changes it releases some sort of, I think, is it niacin? I don't know what it is, but that releases things into your system, and you can see more clearly it kind of harkens back to our hunter-gatherer days, where when they were starving, it increased their eyesight so they could hunt and find stuff. So if you haven't eaten for a while, if you notice, you can see a little bit more clearly. And it could be, we hadn't eaten actually. We had snacked. We had a meal afterwards, a delicious meal of ribs and that had been cooking while we were in there. So anyway, maybe I should let John now talk about some of the stuff that happened.
Sharon, let me just get a couple of questions in for you. During the course of this event, a number of times, and tell me if I'm incorrect in this, but a number of times during the ceremony, did the shaman stop the ceremony and yell out to me and was asking me questions?
Yes.
Okay.
And you want me to say what it was?
Well, you know what? You get to give Doug a big I told you so on this.
Yes. I was thinking about I want a signed acknowledgement that I was right about something.
Listen, you are going to get a public apology from me shortly, but let's just go a little bit further with what happened. Okay. As Sharon and the rest of the people that were participating in the sweat ceremony, I was the keeper of the flame, and I was responsible for bringing in the rocks. And each of these rounds, just so you can understand the intense heat here, I brought in 7 rocks, and I would say these rocks weighed anywhere from probably 10 to 15 pounds, and they were so white hot that they became somewhat translucent. I'm telling you, this is just incredible heat. Well, anyway, as they're doing the smudging ceremony, outside the area of the sweat, around the sweat, it's been blessed. And there's these flags at basically the 4 points of the compass. And in theory, nothing negative may come in past these flags. They create this boundary. Well, I saw a dark shape moving around at the boundary. And I was seeing it as this kind of not particularly distinct shadow figure and not feeling really good about what it was. I asked one of the people on my team to look over in that direction and tell me if they saw anything. And he also saw this thing and also said, that is not something good. Well, as everyone entered into the sweat lodge, this thing became very agitated and started really moving around. And about halfway through the first round in the sweat, I was starting to get pretty concerned about what this thing was doing because it was really putting on a show and was really acting aggressive and stuff. And I'm not saying anything, and it's not making any noise. And the shaman, who's inside in the pitch black doing his thing, stops and asks me if I'm okay, and then asks me what it's doing out there. So he had a level of awareness of this entity doing, I don't know, the cha-cha or whatever it was doing, even though he was in pitch blackness and couldn't actually see it occurring. So I told him everything was fine. I said, you know, this thing's out here, but just continue. And so that went on. But evidently, this thing was having the ability to kind of mess up what was going on within the sweat lodge. And it seemed like every time this thing got really active out there, the shaman would call out, stop the ceremony, and ask me if I was okay, and ask what this thing was doing. Then at one point, right after the beginning of the second round of the sweat lodge, this entity stops what it was doing in terms of like kind of running around at the boundary, and it like stayed in one spot, but it started like undulating, and it was like kind of like how a cobra's head moves back and forth, you know, very serpentine. And I'm watching this thing, and all of a sudden I like stagger forward, and I all of a sudden got real clear in terms of the clarity of thought and realized that it had almost put me under, hypnotically. It had almost put me under. And, you know, I'm trained as a hypnotist, and I know that it almost put me under the way what it was doing. And what it was doing, I got the sense of intent. As that happens, immediately as that happens, the shaman shouts out, and he's like, John, are you okay? Are you sure you're okay? And again, I didn't make any noise. It's not like I screamed or anything like that, or, you know, or did anything that should have alarmed him. But again, he was aware of how this was all playing out. Well, that round ended, and at that point, the shaman actually came out and challenged this thing and went through a ritual of, like, pushing it away. And let me tell you my take on it. If you remember, like, the old cartoons where whatever the bad cartoon character was doing something and the good cartoon character basically lit his butt on fire, and then the bad character would run all around all kind of crazy with his butt on fire and then take off. That's what happened after the shaman did his thing with it. It was just bizarre, and I'm still trying to figure out what it all means. Now, some of you are probably wondering, well, what was it? Well, I can tell you it wasn't a human spirit. And I'm sure that Sharon would like to tell Doug what it was.
Yes, Doug. Now, listen very carefully. It was a skinwalker. Now, see, I was right.
So, now, for those of you that kind of aren't in on this, is months ago, Sharon came across this concept of this type of entity called the skinwalker. And it's, you know, to be honest, it's you know, based in their Native American legend, and it's kind of out there. And so we kind of teased her for a while because she was so into it, and we kept kind of bringing back conversations to it and stuff like that. And then sure enough, you know, it's kind of like whenever you, at least me, I'm going to speak personally, you know, whenever I think I know it all, something comes around and basically bites me on the butt to remind me that I don't know as much as I think I know. Because I was one that jumped right in there and was teasing poor Sharon. And then not even 6 months later, we actually see this type of entity. So,
didn't it have glowing eyes? And Joel, well, also saw it?
Joel, yeah, at one point it was looking at us, and Joel could see that its eyes were like a silver glowing, you know, typically, like, if you have light reflecting off of animals or even people for that matter, like campfire light, because there's this big bonfire going on, you know, what reflects tends to be red. And this had a silver element to it. And so it was something that was, it was very nasty. I mean, it was just, it wasn't a human spirit. The other thing that was interesting that was going on also at the same time is that when this ceremony occurs, other Native American human spirits, spirits that had been human, they approach the lodge. And, you know, they stand around and they're very respectful, and a lot of times they'll start chanting and stuff. And when this, whatever this creature was doing its things, the human spirits were actually as far away from them as possible and still be at the location, if that makes sense. And, you know, we're talking, you know, these particular spirits I've interacted with before, and it's not that they're aggressive, but they are assertive. And they really wanted no part of whatever this thing was. And the shaman, you know, afterwards said that, you know, this was a skinwalker. Sharon, I apologize for teasing you all those times about the skinwalker, because sure enough, we certainly experienced it this weekend. And this is, like, actually the second time that I've been at a sweat ceremony where something like this has showed up.
Wow.
Someone's asking, what's a skinwalker's purpose and can it hurt you? Well, according to the legends and the belief system, the skinwalker is essentially a practitioner of like black arts. It's kind of like, you know, the polar opposite of the spiritual shaman that we were with. And the skinwalker engages in what the Native Americans refer to as corpse magic. They, you know, they use pieces of corpses, human corpses, in their ceremonies and stuff. And, you know, basically the belief is that they are able to, they kind of become something that's neither animal nor human. And, you know, basically they're a malevolent entity. And the shaman's belief is that, in fact, these things can hurt you. I was pretty impressed with the level of power that I felt associated with this entity. You know, my response when it almost hypnotized me, and that's the first time that's ever happened, and I'm actually someone who's very difficult to hypnotize. I was furious because for me this was like this gross boundary violation, and I really kind of, you know, I literally felt violated. And you know what? I felt like, you know, I wanted to walk across the blessed area and kick it right in the old orbs, if you know what I mean. And later when I mentioned that to the shaman, he said, yeah, and you'd have probably walked away with one foot. But I don't know. But I was absolutely furious because what it did to me, was a boundaries violation. So my experience with most spirits is that they are, in fact, respectful in terms of our boundaries and stuff. So now, Sharon, you were also selected to do something very special after that ceremony.
Yes, I was. Actually, I had not even known anything about this part of it at all, and the shaman said that I needed to sleep overnight in the lodge. And it's kind of like a vision quest where you ask for, you know, help with the purpose of your life and things like that. And so after we got out of the sweat ceremony, we had our meal, and then the lodge was prepared for me to sleep in. So I received a sleeping bag and a pillow, and I was placed in the west direction in the lodge. And we went out there, and he prayed for me, you know, and gave me a woman's pipe. And I was to hold the woman's pipe while I was in there in my left hand, which signifies the heart. And so he shut the door, and there I was in pitch black and holding this pipe. And I'm contemplating, you know, I didn't want to go to sleep and roll over into the pit. So I get myself over as far as I can to the wall. And I you know, prayed for a while and asked for a direction on the purpose of my life. Was there anything that these spirits would give me? And it was like then I snuggled into the sleeping bag, and amazingly, I didn't think I was going to be able to sleep. But I went to sleep, and I really went to sleep. And I would wake up periodically, and I could hear John and the shaman talking outside. But I would also see these lights again. I could feel movement of, shapes that you couldn't discern. At one point, it was like I could discern this elderly woman sitting. It was like I was laying on my left side. And just slightly on my left side, and you know how you draw your legs up, and there's kind of like an L shape there, a curve, and she was sitting in that curve, and then kind of even resting her hand on my leg. I mean, she was just very there with me. And later the shaman said that was grandmother. And so I'm sleeping there, and I was snug as a bug in a rug.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, can I mention, we'll stop right there, because okay. at this point in the night, it's actually about 3:30, and you know, we hadn't talked to you because basically we put you in there at midnight,
mm-hmm.
and then your very dedicated associate stood watch at the door from midnight to 5 a.m.
That's true.
And I believe it got down to 31 degrees, so it was a little bit brisk outside, not to mention that there were nasties running around in the forest. But anyway, at one point, some interesting things happened. You and I had a conversation early in your day, and you said that if you astral traveled, you were going to try and contact me. And
right.
It was about 3 o'clock in the morning, and the shaman wasn't with me at that point. And I heard your voice. Now, I was sitting facing the fire as close as I could get in the fire and not actually start smoldering because of the temperature. But I had my back to the lodge. I heard you talking to me from the other side of the fire. And it was like you were, I could see you, but I sensed that you were there. And you were telling me something which I couldn't make out. And shortly after that happened, the shaman comes over, and I hadn't had a chance to say anything yet, and he says, Sharon's traveling, but she may not remember that, but she'll remember that the grandmother visited her tonight.
Huh.
And at this point, you know, when the shaman tells me something, I'm taking it at face value, because every time he tells me something, I usually ends up getting verified in many different ways. So as you're having your experience, I'm having an experience out there, and he's telling us these things that you had yet to tell us.
The grandmother.
About the grandmother, yeah. So, I'm sorry, go ahead and continue.
And he was right. I did not remember that. I mean, I couldn't even remember what I had dreamed about, and I did dream. But I had asked him if I could take a little flashlight and a notebook and a pen. And when I wake up, I can just write it all down. But he, you know, he wouldn't allow that to go in. So he just said, you're just going to have to remember it, and which I don't remember it. And maybe something will come to me later. But it was about, I suppose, 7 o'clock in the morning when finally the flap came up and he woke me up. And we went out, and then we talked about there's a little bunkhouse there, and we went inside, and he had me ask him questions and everything. He gave me a gift, and I gave him a gift in turn, and it was just an actual amazing experience. It really was, and I don't know, you know, what else to say, but it was amazing. And I think,
Sharon, I don't want to get into your business because I actually don't know, because I wasn't part of this aspect of your time with the shaman. But in terms of his psychic abilities, because obviously he has these medium skills in order, you know, his ability to communicate with spirits and stuff like that. Did he share information with you of a nature that he really couldn't possibly know about?
Well, absolutely. I mean, he told me stuff that nobody would have. I mean, he's over in Virginia. I'm in Ohio. You know, I've never met the man before. And when we drove up and we got out of the car, he looked at me. He says, yes, I knew. She's blonde and thin. And he knew what I looked like.
He described you to me months ago, and very accurately. Let me just, again, I'm not asking for details or anything, but in your conversation with him, he wasn't asking you questions, was he? He was making statements. Is that correct?
That's correct. You know, he would just say, well, this and this and this.
And he was not generalizing things at all, was he?
No, he hit it right on the money.
So, like, for instance, if he was talking, saying that you owned a brown polka-dotted puppy that had a white paw, there was no, like, I see a four-legged furry in your life, and it may be a dog or it might be a cat. It was none of that kind of stuff, was it?
No, no. It's just absolutely as if he's been standing here in my house, and you just kind of fall into the conversation as if, you know, he knows all of this. And there's no, you know, possibility, well, you know, maybe it's this, maybe it's that. I mean, he just absolutely knows. I actually learned a lot from this man. We were taking a walk across the road, and he kind of took my shoulders and pointed me in a direction. And he said, okay, now what do you see down there? He continually would ask me, what did I see? And I thought, oh, goodness me, this is a test. I hope I'm going to say something that's right, you know. And so I'm looking down there, and it's like I see groups of people. And I said, well, you know, there's groups of people there. He said, okay, now what do you feel? And I said, well, I feel a real heaviness in my chest. And he said, okay, those are graves down there. And so I said, so that when you feel heaviness like that in your chest, you are actually discerning that there's a grave someplace. And so that taught me to connect a feeling to what something is. And I mean, time and again, you know, I was getting this from him and learning, you know, to actually zero in on what I'm seeing and feeling. And I think, John, you probably have learned a lot from him, too.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, it's absolutely amazing being around him. He's a very powerful psychic. And, you know, as you know, a lot of you know, I'm psychic as well. And whether or not you believe it, Sharon, you, in fact, are very psychic. And like when the three of us were together, it was like, for me, it's always like a multiplier in terms of ability. Our friend Mr. Psychic Dice is here tonight. You know, he talks about the group collective PK and joining together type thing. And in terms of from a psychic perspective, I mean, clearly that was happening for us. But while we have, you know, we've almost shot through our hour already, I want to just talk about one event that happened when we were out on that walk. At one point, the shaman had gotten sick, and every time we go on this trail, he gets sick at the same point. He gets nauseous, and he gets a pain in the side, and it just about folds him over. And his wife says, you know, we used to walk here all the time, but he doesn't like to come here because every time he's here, this happens to him, and the shaman couldn't figure out what was going on about this. Now, I started like kind of focusing in on the environment there and became aware of a little boy. And so I told the shaman, well, I think there's a little boy here and he's trying to tell you something. You know, he's got a message for you. And so Sharon and I and the shaman were trying to like, you know, focus in on this little boy, and we really couldn't connect with him, couldn't, you know, hear what the message was. So we ended up walking down the trail, I don't know what, Sharon, maybe about 50 or 60 feet, maybe a little bit further.
I would say maybe a little further.
Yeah, from that location. But it was a location that was, you know, within our eyesight, so we'd see if people came or anything like that.
Mm-hmm.
And we were looking at some other stuff, and then we started to leave. And then I was pulled back to the location where the shaman was, had gotten sick. And I said, I think we need to go back. There's something wants me to go back. So we went back to that spot where we'd been standing. And on the trail, and we're talking dimensionally, a drawing on the trail about 2 foot by maybe a foot tall. Mm-hmm. It might not quite be that big, but roughly that dimension. And what it was like someone had taken a stick and had drawn a picture on the trail. And that had not been there when we were standing there. And this picture looked like what a little child would draw. And what was drawn on the trail was an old-fashioned push baby buggy. And fortunately, I was actually able to get some photos of it. And I actually put my digital recorder down so there's a perspective in terms of what the size is. Now, some of you might say, well, you guys were just, you know, talking. You were talking to a ghost and, you know, not paying attention. Well, first of all, walking in this nature preserve where we were, and the type of path it is, animal prints show up on it. And the shaman's Native American, and he's a very good tracker, and he, as you're walking, he's continually pointing out things on the trail, that's this, and that's that, and then that. So he's always looking down, and he's very aware of the ground and stuff like that. So I can absolutely tell you that that thing was not there. And again, we tried to make contact with the child. We couldn't really get a reading in terms of what he wanted. But I've never, ever had like a spirit drawing before. You hear about it, you read about it. But for the first time in my life, I actually got to experience it. And I believe that was the first time the shaman had seen something like this as well. So,
well, I have a question. I heard at one point when you guys were together out doing the investigation that Sharon's hair actually got lifted up.
Well, that was the night before, and I'm going to tell you what, Sharon's an absolute trooper because Jordan Springs isn't like a malevolent, haunted place with bad spirits, but I'm telling you what, it's packed with spirits, and for people who are sensitive or psychic, it can be very overwhelming because, they're coming at you, they're trying to talk to you, and I've never been anywhere in the world that I've traveled like that. And so when they're like, all these spirits are like pressing in on you like that, it messes like with your equilibrium, and it's, it's somewhat intimidating. And, this is, Sharon's first time there, and, things are coming up to her. Literally, at one point she says, I feel like something's touching my hair. And I look at her head, and there's this whole, it's a clump of hair, like 30, 40 strands of hair all together. And it's being lifted up, and it's literally about 4 inches above, like, maybe the crown of her head, the very top of her head.
Yeah.
And it's like being held at the very tip of this hair, and there's like this like loop effect going on. And Sharon said, "Well, I think maybe my hair just dropped." Now Sharon's got straight blonde hair, and literally this thing was sticking up, and then it all, she ended up touching it and pushing it down. But there was no like cobweb or anything in there that would have, naturally, like snagged the hair and lifted it up or something. And then later on, the same spirit, I assume it was the same spirit, ended up, touching you on the arm. Is that correct, Sharon?
Well, yes. When that first time I was touched, I was getting the impression of this spirit saying, "Don't go, don't go." And oftentimes I've had spirits not want me to leave where they are. Somehow, I don't know why they like me, but I guess it's because I love them. And so I thought, well, I've got to go back in there and talk to this one who didn't want me to go. So later that night, that was when Joel was get that demonstration of that loop camera. And we're standing back there, and something touched my head. It went 1, 2, 3. And I thought, now, if it had been one time, I would have thought, oh, well, that's my imagination. Two times, I would have thought, oh, well, maybe, but now 3 times I knew somebody was really trying to get my attention. And then it felt like somebody would just touch me on my upper arm. And I thought, is that my jacket or my coat moving? And I pulled the arms of my jacket down and held them with my hand so it would be tight. And there was no way it could move on its own. And then on the other arm, something touched me. And it was like I could feel that presence right there. And this was the spirit I had talked with earlier that she had lost a loved one, and I think she's looking for that loved one. And I don't know if she's a Civil War nurse or someone who lost somebody in the Civil War or what. But
Sharon, my sense, you see, I've run into that spirit a number of times over the last couple of years that I've been investigating there. And mm-hmm. whether or not she was formerly a nurse, I don't know that. But I can tell you that she was, in fact, nursing the soldiers that were there. Mm-hmm. And you were able to dial in that she actually, there was a personal connection in terms of someone that was close to her that she also took care of. Now, the interesting thing was, is when you were doing that, first of all, we were doing a video and audio feedback loop experiment, an ITC experiment, and every time Sharon asked a question, the frequency on the audio changed and the video on the screen changed. And again, it only happened when Sharon was asked, talking to the spirit, and I was actually hearing the spirit talk. I couldn't make out what was being said, but I could hear a reply, and the equipment was catching it. Now, I'm hoping on review that we actually have some audio that we can, like, understand what's being said. But the interesting thing was, as this was also happening, I tell Sharon, I said, I'm getting a sense of anxiety from the spirit due to the questions you're asking. And then all of a sudden, there was like this overwhelming emotional just like release in terms of the spirit. And it was like, you know, break your heart kind of sad. And we were doing this in front of a group of guests because this was a public investigation that we host at Jordan Springs. And there were four women sitting at this one side of the table. And they were literally about 6 feet from where this woman's spirit was. All four of them became very emotional, and one actually started crying. And at that point, Sharon hadn't even, like, said, she had a loved one that died here, or she's looking for a loved one that had died here. It hadn't even gone to that area to, like, suggest to them that, you know, there was this sadness or anything like that, you know, like that. The psychological pump had not been primed in any way. The only thing that I had said was, I'm feeling anxiety from the spirit based on the questions you're asking. So that was unique, that these people who were guest investigators, they experienced, you know, emotionally this spirit. Hey, you know what? We're down to the last 2 minutes, Mike.
Yeah, we are, man.
So we want to thank you, Sharon.
Oh, you're welcome.
And if you'll stay on the line, well, I'll tell you what, I'll call you back in a second if you'll hang loose.
And Sharon, I want to just tell you something. You have an open invitation. You can investigate with me and Shenandoah Shadows anytime you want, okay?
Okay, well, thank you very much. I really appreciate it. Oh, I better say later and not bye-bye.
That's correct. Okay.
That's correct in Native American.
Yep.
Okay, Sharon, we'll call you back in just a couple minutes, okay? Thank you.
Okay. Bye.
Bye. All right, John.
Okay, Mike, who's on this week on Paranexus Universe on Thursday night?
Doug and Grant will be interviewing, it looks like, James Willis, Weird, Scary, and the Unusual. He is the founder of the Ghosts of Ohio and has spent over 25 years seeking out all things strange and spooky. So, you know, that'll be a pretty good show. And as far as us, do we have anything coming up next week, or do we know yet? Is it just going to be kind of a surprise for everybody?
Next week we don't have a special guest, but the following week we do. We have our friend who wrote the Art of the Psychic Dice.
Oh, that's so right. And he's in the chat room right now.
Yeah. So, Robert, we're looking forward to seeing you in a couple weeks. And, Mike.
Now, I have one question for you, man.
Okay.
How was the whole thing? I mean, if you had one statement to make about this past investigation, how was it?
Well, you know, for me, it was incredibly validating because, you know, I'm always talking about Jordan Springs, and I'm talking now lately about, you know, this location where the shaman lives in terms of the level of haunting activity and stuff like that. And to have someone else come there and not experience one or two things, but basically experience all the things is very validating for me. This was like going to a paranormal Disneyland for the weekend. It was nonstop activity, and it was absolutely amazing.
Wow. All right, then, everybody, you have a good work week, and we'll see you Thursday night on Paranexus Universe with Doug and Grant. Everybody take care.